I've always looked at your recent history, you know, ever since I first met you at
House of Genius.
How can I forget the name? It's such a great name, which is why I was attracted to it. But just now, I finally went back and, like, you have to hit more to scroll down 12 years or whatever, how many years? And you started in big banking.
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Because I know you as, like, gritty supporter of startups, supporter of, you know what I mean, like, good causes. Like, we'll get to all that. But is that what led to it? Did you come out of college wanting to be work for the big money?
I came out of college following the herd.
Okay.
I studied finance. I thought I wanted to be this amazing international businesswoman, right?
Right.
That, and I had this vision.
Like from 80s movies, or like who was your idol?
I don't know if I had an idol, but it was, I want to be traveling. I want to be doing business across the globe. I had this very idealized version of what that would be.
Right.
But coming out of undergrad, I felt, you know, went the recruiting route. And if you're in business, you recruit for banking, consulting, or accounting. And I recruited for banking and accounting.
Right.
But I really wanted to move to New York. I was living in DC at the time. All my friends were going to New York. It was the place to be. Banking was the place, you know, the thing to do in New York. So I went. And look, it was a good training ground. It was a great way to, you know, live life in New York your first couple of
years. Woohoo!
But quickly realized, no, this is not the life I want to have. I was working 80 to 100 hour weeks. You worked hard, you played hard, but that can only last for a couple of years. And so after a while, I ended up at another firm, was more on the buy side, went through the whole financial crisis.
Which years is this?
This was, so I was there 05.
Because I feel like we've had a couple of crises. But real quickly, it's funny you say a couple of years. Some people, that's their life. More, more, more. There's not enough. And I'm not even talking about Madoff. I'm just talking about, you know, regular folks that you went to school with or whatever. It's like, well, got to have the huge house in Buckhead or in the city or whatever. You know what I mean? And so it doesn't end. So I think it's good that you know, saw that early.
Yeah. Yeah. It just was not the lifestyle I wanted. I was miserable. I wanted to sleep. I wanted to have a healthier lifestyle. So, you know, I went to another firm where I wasn't working as many hours, but still, I didn't see myself becoming my boss, you know? And I think as you want to continue growing in your career, if you can't see yourself at that next level or the level above you, it's time to make a change. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but business school made sense. My firm was being sold, so it was a natural transition time for me to leave, to go back. And I went and got my MBA. And that led me to actually join the more of the technology route. So it was a very non-traditional turn in my career, but one that I was excited about.
I don't know that I've ever heard it put so simply. It's like, yeah, if you don't see yourself taking your boss's job, if you look at your boss's job and go, ugh, then, which I know many people listening to this or have had that feeling, then like, oh yeah, like get out.
Yeah.
It's why for someone like me, like I didn't know that I was an entrepreneur. Like I just, cause so you have to remember in, you know, early 90s, like if you said you were an entrepreneur, like what does that mean? You're homeless? You're like, I mean, you're jobless, you're unemployed. Like what does that even mean? And so I thought that was like a specific, like the kid that started mowing lawns at 14. And I wasn't that kid for sure. I didn't get my shit together till much later. But I knew not only could I not be my boss, I couldn't be anyone around me. I was like, okay, this place is not even at like 2021. I was like, okay, I'm not made for this world. It took me many years later to find my own, but I just think that's great that you put it so simply. So what attracted you about tech?
I had been interested in just learning more about emerging technologies. It was the era of Facebook, when Google was coming, you know, rising. And there was just a lot of energy in that area. I knew I wanted to work at a company, right? I'd been working in a very specific silo, but wanted to do something more general management, really be in the meat of how do you develop a product? How do you sell it? How do you interact with customers? I didn't have any of that experience. And so I joined Thomson Reuters. They're a big multinational organization. You probably know them for Reuters News.
Right.
But they also create a lot of software technology for professionals. And so for me, it was the natural fit. I came from banking. They had banking solutions. It just felt right. But again, what was interesting was, again, I saw myself as an operations person, a finance person. I never thought I'd end up in product, in actually building emerging technologies and working with startups. But life can send you on interesting pivots sometimes. And I was living up in New York, but after coming back from business school in Chicago, I was like, okay, I'm over New York. It's been great for now, but I'm older. I need more space. Time to try somewhere else.
Right.
So my husband and I were looking around, and the first opportunity that came up was Atlanta. My husband got a transfer down here, and I went to the team at Thomson Reuters and said, hey, I'm moving. We either can make this work, or I'm going to have to leave. I don't want to, but I, you know, that's the reality. We're leaving New York. And at the time, there was a senior executive who was based here in Atlanta, kind of had a small office here, and he was the head of mobile technology. And somebody said, go talk to Bob. See, maybe he has a job for you in his group. And I'm like, mobile technology? I've been in operations. I've been in finance. I'm not a developer. What value am I going to add to the mobile technology team?
Right.
Well, I wasn't really aware of this concept of like a product leader, or you need to take that technology and actually turn it into something that can be sold. And that's really where my expertise and knowledge kind of fit. And so Bob was like, yeah, we're recruiting smart people who are motivated, like come join the team. And it actually put me on a whole new trajectory. So
what was that first gig? What was your kind of day-to-day?
Yeah, my day-to-day was, we were evolving from mobile tech. So looking at, you know, what kind of applications we could be taking some of our solutions and turning them into mobile apps. This was back in, 2014? So it was right when apps were starting to become popular. But also this team became eventually the corporate innovation team. So the team started looking at all these new emerging technologies. What is this thing called blockchain? What is this artificial intelligence? How does it work? And how do we actually apply it to make it useful for customers? And so that was my main role, was to look at what are some of those technologies out there and how can we actually turn them into not just little fun toys that we experiment with internally, but actually really revenue generating products.
For that particular company?
Yes.
Not external.
Well, so we were selling it into the market. So how can we create? A great example is we created this, what we called Moneyball for lawyers. And it was taking AI technology and looking at all the information from prior court cases. And can we start to predict how a judge might rule in a case based on a variety of different factors? So that was a way of applying AI and machine
learning. That's awesome. My eyes got big for audio listeners. That's fascinating. So did it? Does it work?
It does. And eventually we rolled it out. It really depends on, you know, the sub case that you're looking at. So we were focused on IP litigation, which is a very small segment of the law. But basically, there's only a subsegment of judges that review all these cases. And so you can really see the repeat of their history and how they tend to rule over time based on different factors. And then after I was involved in the project, they expanded it to other areas as well.
Did you ever talk to these judges and they either hated it or didn't like it or...
I did not talk to the judges. We actually were working with a startup partner at the time. And that's how I really started to get involved with startups, was we had found this really interesting startup that was already doing this type of work and developed a partnership where they helped us with some of the technology and and we co-created this product together.
Because I feel like nobody wants to think they're predictable. And I would assume that they might have an opinion about that. But then if they looked at the data, they'd be like, oh, you're right. I do too. It seems like, I mean, wow, it just seems with something so human, it would be hard to predict because there is so many factors. So does this product exist today, or it never quite got off the ground, or it didn't work, or?
It got off the ground in a different format, and it's embedded in Thomson Reuters' larger solution that's out there, but is basically helping to predict some outcomes of cases.
Yeah, I don't know why that's so fascinating to me, but I think for those that appreciate Moneyball, right? For people appreciate, and I've seen that movie multiple times. Go back and rewatch it if you haven't. And yes, it's a movie, so there are things that happen and things that didn't happen. But this concept of, and especially some in sports, say it's gotten too far, right? Like, who cares what the sheet says? Just go with your gut and do X, right? And like all things in sports, if you make it, you're a genius. If you don't, you're an idiot. So that's just how it goes, right? So, I mean, are you a sports fan?
Yes.
Okay.
Not so much baseball, but other sports.
Well, so in football, it's 20-19. Do we kick it and go into overtime or go for it? And it's like, you know, do we think we have a play that can get us one fucking yard at this time, right? Yeah. And then it's, did you execute it? So I think there's a perfect example. I think it was the Ravens that had one that sometimes the play blows up and you're like, well, that was really stupid. But sometimes the play is perfect. Like, we're going to do this and this. And sure enough, you called it right, but the receiver dropped the ball, right? So is the coach an idiot now? No, but people are going to say he is because they lost the game. So anyway, I'm interested in all that stuff. And I'm not even like, and I know nothing compared to people that live and breathe 24/7, you know, talk sports and all the shows and all that. But I just think this idea of, you know, having to look, you know, in Moneyball, there's this famous scene where they're like, you know, they're like, well, you got to do this and this. And he's like, I don't care about righty lefty. And they're like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, what do you mean? Right?
Yeah. And it's interesting how, you know, one decision can impact the next decision, right? So it depends on that tree, that decision tree. And sometimes when you don't take the first the first decision, then all the statistics change. And that's where it gets really complicated in terms of predicting outcomes.
And that's why you need a computer that thinks much faster than you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because it's an infinite number of solutions, right?
Right. Right.
Once you shift once.
Right. And there's oftentimes a lot of different factors that come into play. And the human brain's ability to process all those different factors can work sometimes. But I think a computer does a lot better at doing that in a number of instances.
Well, I definitely want to talk to you about startups. So why don't you quickly say what House of Genius is, and then we can kind of go from there.
Yeah, so House of Genius is a grassroots community. It's a nonprofit that helps startups particularly, but really any local organizations with a challenge that they're facing. We organize events nationally, but there is a chapter here in Atlanta. And what we do is we bring together a small group. Usually it's about 10 to 15 people, all with the intent of helping an entrepreneur overcome a challenge that they're facing. So the entrepreneur will, you know, pose a question to the what we call our panelists. And there's a really great moderated format where you offer advice. And what's really unique is that everybody is first name only until the end of the event.
Right.
And I really love this format because it's all about bringing the ideas to the forefront. So you really keep your biases out of the room and out of the conversation. It's not like you're there saying, oh, well, I have 30 years of marketing experience, so you should believe what I say.
Right.
We all just unite around the genius of all the ideas that come to the table in the discussion.
Right. Well, that's what I think. I think more works the other way. Like, if I know you're in banking, I might listen to you differently, right?
Yes.
And then afterwards, we all get to say it. And I think that's the second half of it is like, oh, maybe there is a relationship here for a co-founder, for whatever, for a friend, for, you know, whatever, for a podcast guest, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I love the idea. I want to ask you, I just had this thought. they say in like dating, right? Like we kind of know, even not even dating, like 30 seconds of meeting someone, you're like, okay, I like this person, I don't, right? And I feel like for someone who's seen a lot of pitches, is that true for you? You like, it sinks in your gut right away, this person's got it or they don't, or not?
I like to give people the benefit of the doubt. I don't think it's always crystal clear because a lot of times there's great ideas, but maybe the founder isn't at a place yet where it's fully thought out, or it's, you know, they personally have been baked enough to have that pitch down. So I've seen a lot of entrepreneurs that either come out of the gate and like they're very charismatic, they can tell their story, they have a great idea, but you know, 9-12 months later, it's like, what happened to that business? And they're gone. And then on the flip side, there's other entrepreneurs that might have come through House of Genius that are very early stage, really don't have a great concept yet, but there is nuggets of real something there. And 2 years, 4 years later, they're actually like truly raising money. They have maybe, you know, 20 to 50 employees. And it's just great to have seen that evolution.
But when you're in the room and you're helping put together the event, so you're thinking about the whole event, yeah, right? But are you watching people and do you feel your gut go a certain place? And then you're like, okay, I need to hold that back. Because you're not speaking, you're not one of the people. Yeah. But I'm just saying internally.
Yeah. You mean from a feedback perspective?
I just mean from you as a person. You're in the room. You are there to serve us and we're all supposed to get at it. But I'm just saying like you, what you're not saying, just like, okay, me as a person, I think this person's got a great idea. This person's got a lousy idea, but then you're proved different. That's what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I necessarily have that gut feeling.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
cause you've learned to just be patient.
I've learned to be patient, but also I've just been through House of Genius so many times now. And I really focus more on the feedback and really trying to get out those ideas from the people who are offering the feedback and seeing if the entrepreneurs can really internalize that. And that's more what I'm looking for is there that willingness? Is there that opportunity to accept the feedback? To me, that's an indicator of success.
So this person's listening and is coachable or isn't?
Yes.
And I try to give people the benefit of the doubt because, like, of course you're defensive. This is your baby, right? So if people come off defensive right away, I sometimes like, all right, like let's maybe reframe this question or try to get them to see it in a different way. So I have to say, by the way, I think I told you this already after the second time, that I really thought I fucked up. I messed up on the first one because you had explained the way you guys lay it out is, hey, listen, like we're not here to coddle these people, like be honest, like be, don't be a jerk, but be, give constructive feedback. And so it got to me and I thought it was like on a scale of 1 to 10, like a 6 of like, this is the real deal. And I feel like the whole room was like, oh my God, that was way too mean. And I was like, oh, I did it wrong. And I felt bad. But then I was like, no, they wanted me to be honest. And I know that I can come off abrasive, but I thought I was, like I said, down here. And then I don't know what happened after that, but I guess like you want them to get real feedback. You don't want that. So like, I guess, what are you listening for or looking for from the feedback?
From the feedback, I think real feedback is all very important, right? We do want our entrepreneurs to hear a good balance of, you know, if there's somebody who's lost or has true of feelings that, you know, something needs to change, let's talk about it. I do think, you know, part of it is we want everything to be constructive. So sometimes it's about tone, sometimes it goes back to the willingness of the entrepreneur. Because if they automatically get defensive, that's when things can maybe feel a little uncomfortable.
Right.
Uncomfortable conversations are welcome.
Right. I think that's what happened in my case. I'm gonna ask you to remember it because it was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But I remember it felt yucky for a minute, and I put it on myself. I was like, oh, I was too mean.
I don't I don't honestly remember. But, you know, we've had lots of instances where, you know, the room can get uncomfortable for a minute, but that's okay. But that's what the moderators and, like, our team is there for.
Right.
Let's take a beat. Let's process. Let's help the entrepreneur maybe internalize some of that. And then how do we make it positive? How do we make it so that the entrepreneur can grow from there? And that's why we have multiple people in the room, because maybe we take some of that, you know, harder feedback. And how do we really action it and help that entrepreneur get over that?
Right.
Sometimes it works, right? Sometimes the group goes along. Sometimes the group wants to dial back and might have other opinions. But that's what we're there to facilitate in terms of the conversation.
Well, I know you have success stories and I want to hear those, but now I have to ask, without naming like names of pitchers or participants, have you guys looked at each other like, oh shit, we've lost this room, and like this is now a train wreck?
I don't know about a train wreck, but there are, you can tell like when the panel is really into it and when there's that energy and it's vibing and everybody is just like feeling the genius in the room.
Right.
To me, that's a successful event. There's other times where it just kind of falls flat and people just aren't really sharing. Maybe they don't get the idea. They're not really offering great things. And to me, that's an unsuccessful event.
Worse than if there's tension, you mean?
Yes.
Just flat.
Yes. Flat is the worst of an event. Tension, you know, can go either way. I don't think I've ever had like a situation where people left feeling uncomfortable or left feeling upset about the experience. So to me, that's pretty positive.
Yeah. I mean, it is a panel of whatever,
yeah,
10 people. And it's just like a concert or a comedy club or anything. Like the vibe is going to be the vibe and there's a tone that day. And I've seen things in life where like one or two people kind of take over. That can be a thing too. Have you had a lot of issues with that?
Maybe once or twice, but part of the secret sauce is our moderating format, right? So we have a moderator, someone who...
You have usually a couple, I feel like.
Yeah, so there's one moderator per conversation. We start with one entrepreneur, one moderator. We'll take a break and then do it all again with a new moderator,
right,
and a new entrepreneur. And that moderator is supposed to kind of help manage that process, right? You know, there is an opportunity where we go around the room and everybody has to give feedback. You put them on the spot. When you get to more of open discussion, you know, we try to control it so that person doesn't take over. I would say the challenge is oftentimes our entrepreneur takes over. So when we get into open feedback, you know, there's the opportunity to more have a conversation with the entrepreneur and they can respond to questions or feedback. But you only get 20 minutes.
Right.
And so if they're talking a lot, it means they're not getting other ideas from the people in the room. And so that's one thing I really try to warn our entrepreneurs and kind of dial them back a bit on.
Right. And again, I think that's great. The first thing around is no feedback, just listen.
Yes.
And take it in. And that's hard for any of us to do. Because I've been in other situations where like I've been given that directive. Like, we're just going to tell you what's up just for 5 minutes. Don't say anything. And you like, but... And then if you're willing to go there and take it in, you have to take it in, right?
Yeah.
What is a common thread that you see people do, like that entrepreneurs do wrong, or that are there a couple things that people who are listening to this, who are like, maybe you're going to come to pitch meetings or do things like this or have an idea. What are the pitfalls to avoid, would you say?
I think there's two. One is just around storytelling, right? You need to find a way to take all the jargon out of your pitch, really explain your idea very clearly, explain it so anybody can understand it. And that can be really hard depending on like what industry you're in or how technical your idea is. But to me, that is so critical. Storytelling is the biggest tool that an entrepreneur has in their toolkit. The second one is, especially for very technical, like emerging technology founders, they fall in love with their tech. They think they have the best tech in the world.
Right.
And they might, right? But sometimes the best tech doesn't get bought by their customers because, again, maybe the storytelling is off. Maybe they don't understand their needs of their customer. So even if you have the best widget, if it doesn't solve the needs, no one's going to buy it. Okay. You're giving me this look.
No, I'm just like, and they basically can't come off it. They're like, but you don't understand, this thing is so great because we hung the moon with this thing.
Exactly. So a great example is, you know, for part of my career, I lived in this world of digital identity. And how do you verify someone's identity, like if you're going to open your bank account, right? And there are so many solutions on the market right now. And all of them say, well, we do it better. Okay, but your customer at the end of the day might want it to be the easiest way of doing it, right? What takes all the friction out so that it's like a no-brainer for the end user? Well, we didn't think of that, but we have the best accuracy rate.
Right.
So there oftentimes is that disconnect of what an entrepreneur thinks is the most important problem that they're solving for, when their customer might tell them, that's great, but actually I need it to do this in order for us to even consider buying it.
Right. So tell us about your current projects. Tell us about Understory.
Yeah. So 2 years ago, I started my own company, co-founded it. It's called Understory. We are a global community really dedicated towards climate and sustainability tech startups.
Okay.
So we help them with everything from promotion and scaling their companies, as well as really enabling them with tools and funding and the connections that they need in order to grow and succeed.
How do you find customers, clients?
So my clients, we have a wide variety of corporations, investors, and small businesses that are engaged with us. We provide a lot of our services in events, and we have a podcast too that's available for free to our community. And then what we do is we layer on additional services for, you know, some of those larger organizations that want to tell their stories in a different way.
So you're all ends. You're the whole ecosystem.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm asking is, how are people finding you on either side, I guess?
Yeah, so we have a variety of different ways. I mean, we've been really successful with some of our channels that are out there. One of our most successful is every month we host an online event called the Startups Driving Sustainability. And we invite...
That's a lot of S's.
It is. But we invite four companies to come tell their stories. They have 10 minutes, so it's like a lightning talk.
Right.
But instead of a traditional investor pitch, which... you know, a lot of people experience out in the market, we focus more on what is that challenge that this company is solving for. Everything from, you know, decreasing plastic waste to helping customers adopt renewable energy, and then describe a bit about their technology and how they're addressing that problem. And it's been a really great way for people across the ecosystem to learn. Because what we're seeing is, you know, over the last 2 years, there's been a lot more time and energy put into sustainability initiatives, whether you're at a large global organization or you're even a, you know, VC, venture capital investor. Everybody's starting to wake up to the opportunity of climate tech. But there's still a huge learning curve in terms of understanding, you know, what are the problems, what are the companies you need to know, who are the people you need to partner with, and what are the solutions you need to look for.
So this format sounds somewhat familiar.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. I mean, it's more of a showcase event.
Right.
So there's not a feedback component, but right. It's still a great way for folks to learn. And that's certainly brought a lot of different people from across the ecosystem into our community. And then we have a couple other channels as well. I mentioned our podcast. That's another way that we're telling stories of these innovators. And then we have a weekly newsletter that goes out with venture capital funding news, information about what's happening across the industry. We have a sustainability jobs board. It's really comprehensive.
Will you eventually be back in person, or you're sticking to online? I assume it started like pandemic stuff. And are you going to stick because you can get people from further away?
So for Understory's particular focus, we're staying virtual because we are a global community. We have companies that have been showcased from Berlin, London. This month, we have someone calling in from Hong Kong. We've had entrepreneurs from Indonesia.
What time of day do you do it?
We do it at 11 a.m. Eastern.
Okay.
So that reaches Europe. It catches the West Coast.
Right. So if I'm calling in, it means I'm calling in at like, what, 2 in the morning?
From Asia.
From Asia, yeah. Bummer for them, but hey, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You want to reach America, you better stay up late.
Exactly. But in terms of in-person, Understory has also been collaborating and partnering with another local firm called the Greenhouse Accelerator. And we've started these Atlanta Climate Tech meetups. We've hosted 2 so far. We started in December. And this is more of our efforts to bring together the local Atlanta ecosystem as well.
Right. So, you know, this whole concept of venture capital is still like a generational thing. Like once upon a time, you started a business like with a loan from a bank, or you started it with your savings. This idea of I can go somewhere else and get money is as a thing, right? I mean, we all kind of knew that that happened, you know, for Apple or for for Bill Gates or whoever, and whatever things happened, you know, in Silicon Valley in the 80s. But this whole idea of all I needed is an idea, and now it's all I need is an idea, and I can throw up a free web page and a social media page. I feel like in some cases it's made people slightly lazier because they like, oh, well, I just need somebody to give me a bunch of money. Do you know what I'm saying? So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I think from the outside, it looks easy to go raise money. It is not.
I'm not saying it's easy. No. I'm just saying as a thought of bootstrapping is really hard, right?
Right.
So that's what I'm sort of...
Yeah, bootstrapping is hard, but it does give entrepreneurs a bit more freedom. And there actually is a movement and a lot more focus on alternative forms of fundraising, especially for underserved founders. And underrepresented founders, because, you know, there needs to be a lot more options for people to be able to scale their business. Venture capital, historically, there's a lot of money that go into, you know, certain demographics, and it's getting better. But, you know, whether it's venture capital, it's debt, it's grants, there are a lot more programs and opportunities for startups to get funded.
I guess I'll speak personally. I'm a guy that's always bootstrapped because I just don't know any other way.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm not tied to anybody's money. Sometimes I wish I was tied to somebody's money. But I guess because I meet a lot of people and I don't know, I feel like I hear a lot of pitches just in like meeting people and I'm like, oh, you have an idea, right? You don't really have anything,
right?
Where you haven't built the tech, you haven't, you know what I mean? You've just thought of very little. And it feels like, I'm guessing by the time they get to you, they've been more vetted, I guess.
Yeah. So for Understory, we definitely focus on companies that have traction in the market. We have a few that have been more earlier stage, right? That have come through. We try to give them a little bit more coaching, help them. And, you know, they might be more trying to look for users for their applications or customers, more so than just venture capital. And so that's one of the 2 different areas that we're trying to attract. Sure, the VCs come and try to meet some of these companies, but also the most important thing for a startup is customers. And so we have a platform where, you know, we have different types of individual consumers that, you know, want to be educated about what are some of the consumer solutions that are out there. But more importantly, we also bring in a lot of corporates and small and medium businesses who are also looking to, you know, buy from these startups in order to implement new technologies and solutions into their business. So I firmly believe it's oftentimes those customers that are more important even than the venture capital. Because if you do have traction, if you're able to, you know, start to bring in revenue and generate some capital into your business, there is that opportunity to reinvest and grow. And the longer that you can sustain without bringing in that outside capital, you know, the more opportunity that you have in order to keep control and have more decision-making within your firm.
So define traction for you, though.
I think there's a lot of different ways that you can look at it. I think a lot of times it has to do with, you know, a certain amount of customers that have signed up and are already using some of those services. Sometimes it's, you know, having been vetted by some other well-known organizations like accelerator programs that have looked deep into the technology and see that there's something there.
So do you see yourself as an accelerator, or do you see yourself as next step after accelerator?
We kind of span between both sides of it. I wouldn't call us an accelerator. We don't offer programming, right? So we're not educating startups on what they need to do in order to grow their business. We are more of a platform that's going to give them connection. So can they start to meet some of those other people in the ecosystem that they need to help their business? We're also more of a, you know, content creation platform as well. So
right.
We're able to give them some of that great content that they might want to use in order to continue promoting and telling their story.
Are you doing video?
We do our online event, which is on Zoom.
Right.
So that's how we're doing video right now. Okay. We've experimented with some videos,
right,
but it's not our forte at the moment.
Yeah, just content. Some could be interviews, some could be informational. I started my first podcast in 2012.
Wow.
And not because I had any clue that podcasting was a thing. So I happened to like podcasts myself and, you know, liked it. And I didn't really put any effort into video till probably, I want to say 17, which sounds like a long time ago, but I feel like I got in late. Like, oh my God, what if I started making videos at 2012 or whatever? I feel like I will never not do podcasts. This is my favorite thing to do, is just talk to someone face to face without any cameras.
Yeah.
But I do know that people, that YouTube has become a channel just like Netflix and Hulu. So anyway, I highly recommend it to anybody, whatever field they're in, is like, start making, even if it's 5-minute content, like start doing it.
Yeah, no, that's a really good, piece of advice. And we do have a YouTube channel.
Which I know you didn't come here for advice. I'm just like thinking out loud and telling you, like, it's like, my kids jokingly call me a boomer. I'm not a boomer. Okay, I'm Gen X. But so if I'm doing that, if I'm coming home and putting on YouTube as a channel, then everybody else is, right? Younger than me and right?
Yep.
So that's my sort of litmus test, a litmus test. I mean, I don't just go by my own behavior. Obviously, I ask other people. I don't know where I was going with that. I guess what I'm saying is, like, you guys don't necessarily need a TikTok, but I would say get on YouTube.
Yes. And we do have a YouTube channel. It is recordings. We have webinars on there. I think we have some small kind of teaser videos too.
Right.
So you can get a little taste of the understory on YouTube.
Right. What do you spend most of your time on? What does most of your week consist of? Which sort of side of the ledger?
A lot of my
you time, personally,
yeah. A lot of my time is spent developing relationships, meeting different people in our community, getting to know new startups that are coming through our platform. I get introduced to startups all the time. Want to know more about their business, see if they're a fit, see if we can get them in, and help tell their stories. So that's a big piece of my time. Another piece is, I'm still one of the writers of some of the content, or at least editors. We have a lot of written content on our website. So we're constantly looking at, new areas where we can add a little bit of value and help explain something that's complex in a much more simple way. So often, editing some of that content, looking at it and getting it out to our channels. And then I'd say the last piece right now is, we're launching some new things this year, and so working on some of that strategy and actually getting it out to the market. So one of the new things that we're rolling out within the next month is a new investor community. And what we're doing is we have a lot of these great startups that come through our platform. We tell their stories, and then they go on to raise money or, you know, get acquired or something, you know, really great for the business. On the flip side, we do have a lot of investors coming to us and wanting introductions to some of these startups that come through our platform.
Right.
So we're looking at ways where we can actually scale that.
Right.
And help to, you know, become more of a connector between companies that are fundraising and the investors that are looking for really curated opportunities to go invest in.
So what's the growth for you guys look like? Is it offices in multiple cities, or like where's your growth going?
First and foremost, for me, it's about number of community members and engaged community members. Right now, we're up to about 1,200 community members that engage across our platforms, and we're constantly trying to, you know, spread the word, get people to, you know, to have those multiple touch points across all of our different channels. So for me, that's first and foremost. And then the next thing from a growth perspective is trying to grow the team. We're still operating as a startup ourselves. So, and as we continue to roll out more services, trying to bring on more help in order to, you know, do more of that so we can continue to really serve our community.
And do you still work with House of Genius, or you don't work with those guys anymore?
Oh, I still do. Yeah. So I'm still what's called the city director. So I'm kind of the one leading the team. We have a team of 7 amazing volunteers. It's all, you know, after work, and we all volunteer our time. During COVID, we pulled back a little bit, so we went virtual. We started going to every other month meetings. And that's been working out pretty well. But we're really excited that hopefully in towards the end of spring, we're going to go back in person and start having in-person events again.
That's exciting.
Yes.
I hope we're back to in-person events everywhere.
Yes. I've been, you know, I think it's starting to come back. Definitely seeing a lot more of the startup events where, you know, people are getting out. We've hosted the 2 climate tech meetup events that were in person.
And where do you hold those?
Usually in different entrepreneurial spaces in town. So we hosted one at ATDC, which is in Midtown. It's one of the local accelerator programs. And then we also hosted another at the Russell Center for Innovation, which again is an accelerator and community for Black entrepreneurs.
Can I make a recommendation for a future venue?
Yes.
So I interviewed a woman here who's working on, it's called South Downtown,
okay,
which is just south of here. I forget the exact streets, but I know that they're looking to get people in their community, and I don't even know how much is finished yet, but I could give you her info, and I'm sure they would love to host, like, hey, we want people to know what's happening down here. Apparently, I said, how did you name it? Because like people, like things like, you know, they've made up names like West Midtown and these other things that didn't really exist before. Like, and they said that that actually was the name of this part when downtown was active. I've become very interested. So as if you saw my email this morning, the train goes below here and I take the train every day to work. And I never thought that would be my life in Atlanta. And it's amazing when you get out and walk. Even my wife wanted something from the art store. Okay. So I got off at 10th and like walked to the art store, and I was like, the city looks very different when you walk. So anyway, I'm all about public transpo these days.
That's amazing. I used to take MARTA all the time when I lived in Buckhead.
Right.
Because I could actually walk to the Buckhead MARTA station.
Right.
And getting into the city was so easy.
Right.
Especially, you know, when traffic was at its peak, you know, pre-COVID.
Right.
These days, I live in Morningside, so getting to MARTA is a little bit more difficult.
Right.
So it was actually faster for me to drive down here, but huge fan of MARTA, huge fan of public transportation.
You know, what's the closest? Is there a park and ride? Because that's basically what our city did that they think they did wrong. Is like, okay, these don't go to neighborhoods. They go to these park and rides from the suburbs or from the outer parts of the city. And that's what I do, right? I'm 2.5 miles away from the stop in, I'm from Oakland City. I live in, it's on the border. This is funny enough, the border of West End and East Point. West and East doesn't make sense, but that's where I live. So I can drive, and then I take, it's like, it's 100% quicker than driving. There's no way it's not, because parking here isn't that great.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Which is another reason I tell people to take the train. The point is that it's 6 minutes. Sorry, it's 6 minutes from the West End station where I used to go. It's like 8 minutes from the next one. And it would take me at least 12 to drive, plus finding parking. Anyhow, big fan of the MARTA.
Yes.
We need to get more folks out of their cars. And even I know a lot of people do the Beltline thing, but I'm telling you, if you walk in the actual city, it's very cool.
Yeah. One of those Saturdays or Sundays like a month ago, that was that beautiful Saturday where it was the first like 75 degree day. My husband and I walked across Piedmont Park.
Right.
Into Midtown, down through Midtown. And it was such a nice day to be out and about, walking, experiencing the city. Oftentimes you're not just taking a leisurely stroll through Midtown or downtown.
Right.
And it's just nice. You see the city in a different way.
I concur. Well, listen, we always wrap up with the Atlanta favorites questions. There are no wrong answers.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. What is your go-to order at the Waffle House?
I like a waffle and hash browns extra crispy.
Okay. Why extra crispy?
Preference.
Okay. Just the way you like them. Okay. What is your current favorite place to eat in Atlanta?
Le Bonache, which is in Buckhead.
Okay.
Recently opened, and also a House of Genius friend.
There you go. So. There you go. When did they come to you? Before they were open, or?
I've known the founder for many years. Her husband has actually been the sponsor of House of Genius for our entirety. And they've just become really good friends. And Fru has opened a beautiful restaurant. It's right behind the Whole Foods in Buckhead, across from the St. Regis.
Did I eat food from them when I was there? I've been there twice. Your thing, so...
No, because they just opened in, I want to say, October.
Did I eat Chick-fil-A? What did I eat when I came to you? What do you guys usually have?
We usually have catered food, and we cater from a local caterer. So we find a local business that, you know, we want to because our whole mission is to support small businesses.
I forget what I ate. I feel like it was sandwiches, but I can't remember. Yeah. Rank these in importance to you, okay? Hawks, Braves, Falcons, United.
Hawks, United, Falcons, Braves.
Rare is the person that says Hawks first. They are often last.
I've actually gotten into them this season.
Nice.
My husband, we've been to 2 games, and then we're going to 1 more before the end of the season. And it's just been a lot of fun to watch. And also really got into the series last year when they went to, you know, the Big East Finals.
Is it because he works in that industry or because he likes the Hawks?
He likes the Hawks. Yeah.
Okay. So, you said because of my husband. I wasn't sure.
Yeah. I mean, we've just been watching the games and enjoying it. I'm originally from Milwaukee. So last year was a lot of fun when it was the Hawks and the Bucks.
Right.
You know, going down to the wire. It was hard to... I'm still a Hawks fan over the Bucks, but it was great to see both teams kind of, you know, work their way through the playoffs.
Right. Okay. Publix or Kroger?
Kroger.
Because?
I think Publix is overpriced.
People are very passionate about the grocery store, sometimes more than the sports team question. What is your favorite festival that you like to attend in Atlanta? I know it's been tough the last couple of years, but...
I'm going to say I'm not a festival person.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a favorite concert you've seen in Atlanta?
I'm not a concert person. I'm not a big crowd person.
So the pandemic was amazing for you.
No, I'm a very social person, actually, but I like smaller groups.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's totally fair. My wife's not a big crowd person either.
Nope.
So I get it. As I get older, I'm less and less of a crowd person. I'm the kind of person that might leave before the end of the game because I want to beat traffic. I'm that guy. Actually, but that's another reason to take the train, right?
Yes.
Like I've actually taken my kids to a bunch of wrestling events at State Farm Arena. And you can, you know, hop on the train and go in town. All right. And the final question is, who should I have next on the Atlanta podcast?
Oh, that's a hard question. There's a lot of...
I'll let you recommend a couple. That's fine.
A lot of people doing some great things out there. One person that I'd like to recommend was just at House of Genius.
Okay.
Her name is Kristen Slink. She is building a business called Tech AF, which is helping people with an idea, especially underrepresented founders, think through how they're going to productize it and turn it into something that has technology associated with
it. Okay, I like the name.
So she has great energy. She's really passionate about what she's building, and is, you know, a multiple time entrepreneur as well, successful entrepreneur. So has some really good, you know, experience to share with her founders.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I said that was the last question, but I forgot. I meant to ask you if you wanted to brag about or just speak about a couple of success stories from House of Genius, because I asked you the what were the nightmare, and I never said, okay, I wanted to hear the other side too, like people that have, you know, you've seen going on to cool things.
Yeah. Well, one I'd say that's kind of come full circle. So Jen Graham from Inclusive, when she first started, her business was called Civic Dinners. And it's a platform that helps people have uncomfortable conversations. It started with, can you talk about, you know, issues with city government? How can you bring people together to talk about issues that's happening in your communities? And she took that idea and found a way to really scale it into a larger product. She's raised some funding. She's really grown her team. And what's interesting is I recently judged the Better Workplaces Challenge Cup, which was hosted by SHRM. SHRM is a professional HR organization.
I feel like I've heard of them.
Yeah. They're the professional organization for anyone who is in HR.
Do they have a big convention?
They have a big convention.
Is it usually here?
I was in Vegas last year, okay. But they have a local chapter convention every year too.
So my first business was a staffing company, and I feel like I might have staffed that convention many, many years ago, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. You might have gotten your certifications through SHRM too. They offer a lot of different...
Not me personally, but okay. Others might have gotten their HR certifications. Yes.
But they just recently hosted like a pitch competition looking for, you know, the next HR tech companies that are out there. And Jen actually just presented, and she is going on to the next round of the challenge.
That's so awesome.
It's been really great to see how her business has grown and, you know, has been very successful. We have a lot of other stories that are similar. I mean, Joey Womack came through early when he was starting Goody Nation, and now it's this amazing accelerator program. We've had one company, I actually think it was a company that you were a panelist at. It's called XIQ, and they were providing electric starters for golf carts in order to help golf carts have multiple people use golf carts in like a community situation. And they've actually gone on to participate in Comcast Sports Tech Accelerator. And they've actually have really ramped up the business as well.
I feel like that was the guy I might have been mean to.
Well, maybe he took your advice. But, you know, I think they're a great example where, you know, sometimes...
What was it called? I don't think it was called XIQ back then. I'm going to look it up then.
I believe that that's what it's called.
Because that name doesn't ring a bell, but I definitely remember it was something about... It was definitely about golf carts. And this was right when birds and everything were taking off. So I think we all gave him the feedback that, like, this was wrong. Because birds were like taking over the city at that moment. Yeah. Like they were effing like literally like everywhere. So good for him. Good on him.
Yeah.
So, well, we probably gave him good coaching then. It's probably we need to get the assist. That's amazing. That's amazing. I will totally look them up. Doesn't mean I was wrong. That's all I'm saying. But I feel like that name would ring a bell. We'll do some research on that. But that's awesome. Well, listen, thanks for coming on. Tell people where to find Understory.
Yeah, so you can find us on our website. It's theunderstory.io. Check out our newsletter. Check out our showcase, which is happening on March 23rd. But we host them every single month, so you can always catch another one. And we also have a podcast called The Understory Podcast on all the major podcasting platforms.
All right. Well, thanks for coming downtown today.
Thanks for having me.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.